Good evening and welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Ryan and I'm an alcoholic.
Ryan.
If you're a little chilly this evening, I recommend huddling in small groups. Works very well for penguins. And to open things up, let's start with a serenity prayer for anyone who cares to join us. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And tonight we are discussing steps 8 and 9. I will read the first paragraphs. Well, we'll get there in a second. And tonight to share with us are Nicole and Sean. So thank you for coming out tonight. We are going to begin on page 76. And step 8 is made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And step 9 is made direct amends to such people whenever possible except to do so and injure them or others. So, without further ado, it says, now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which is accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol.
So, who would like to start?
Oh, me? Mm-hmm. My name's Sean. I'm an alcoholic. I brought cheat sheets. Making amends for me early on in working with a sponsor, it was interesting. My sponsor always tried to keep me on the right path. With, are you doing it for you or are you doing it for them? And I think one of the things is, you know, coming to grips with the past honestly. I had to get past the embarrassment and gain a little humility and to grow up, in essence. I did a lot of bad things to a lot of good people. But, you know, with working the steps and coming to meetings and being around all of you, I realized that I wasn't alone. You know, because when I got here, you know, guilt was the gift that kept on giving and, you know, allowed me to torture myself on a daily basis. And that's where I stayed a lot of the time. I don't know about the rest of you, but when I got here, it was about not being able to look myself in the mirror. I couldn't like myself. So being able to work through the steps and gradually getting to that place where it was going to be okay, and being able to make these amends, you know, I was able to start to man up to these things and clean up my side of the street, and I was able to get freed from that guilt. And, you know, I think in doing all of that, it brought me closer to AA. And, you know, with that, it was easier to make those amends, you know, after I got past the first one. And not all of them went well, but it was okay. I knew what the purpose was. It was having the willingness to do it, at least do it. And having that willingness to get guided by my sponsor in doing it. That was the most important part of it, about how I did my amends, is accepting that guidance with my sponsor and working through that. Scary, but it was okay. And, you know, the humility that comes along with that was, I think, the best growth I think I've had. You know, I started drinking at an early age, so that's where the growth stopped. But, you know, making amends for the things that I had done, that's where the growth started again. So that's all I've got on that one.
Thank you. My name's Nicole, an alcoholic. And I haven't ever spoken here before, so just to let you know what kind of drunk I am, I drink until I pass out and wake up in my own vomit, because I'm classic. and, you know, I am, what does Bill say in his story when Abby comes to visit? He says, being unmindful of his welfare, I continued to drink and talk to him, and that's how I lived my life. And I would love to tell you that stopped when I got sober, that I got struck good, and like that I went out and cleared up the wreckage of my past and everything was grand, but that has not been my experience. And so in Alcoholics Anonymous, in that first section, it says, you know, we made our list, we made it when we did inventory. Had I known that, my inventory probably would have been a little different. You know, but at the time I was writing inventory, I was desperate, and I wanted relief from the pain. And so after calling my sponsor and griping every day and telling her how terrible everyone was, she said that maybe I should start writing some inventory. And so I wrote these people down, how much I hated them and all that, and I went through the inventory process, and I experienced a great deal of relief in the seventh step, my first go-around. And so then there was, you know, we made this list, and now there's action and more action. And I am not someone who's into action. You know, if I do step seven and I feel better, I don't mind resting, you know. I don't mind taking a break, you know, and riding that wave as long as I can. And what happens is the insanity begins to return. And I start to feel again like people aren't really treating me right. And it was suggested that perhaps I, you know, begin to make amends. And I did not consult closely with her or review anything. I don't know. I just immediately went out to my ex-boyfriend and made amends because that seemed like the most logical thing to do. And of course, I harmed my family a great deal. I harmed a lot of people, but he was paramount to all those things. And so that's what I did. You know, I went out to make amends to him. And that was the beginning of my amends journey. And I experienced a lot of relief from that. Amends make me feel like I'm experiencing a hypoglycemic event. I feel like my blood sugar's dropped, my arms are tingling, I feel ill. I don't want to go talk to you, I don't want to tell you that I did anything wrong. I certainly would much rather talk about you and how you've harmed me. And it says we don't do that. And so when I made that very first amends, I ate a bunch of candy because I thought I was sick, and I was having a diabetic incident or something. I don't even have diabetes. And and I went and I made amends to him. And what happened was he said that he had also done a lot of things wrong, and the words that came out of my mouth were, "It doesn't matter what you did." And that was God, because it always mattered what he did. He was the sole source of all of my problems at that point. And I had been sober for a while. That relationship happened with me the majority of it in sobriety. And so that's when I realized that this amends deal works. You know, that night I skipped my home group and went to make amends to him. And when I went and met everybody after dinner, I had this really nice smile. I think the proper term is a shit-eating grin, because I felt like I was really doing something good in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's where my amends journey started, was with him. So if any of you ladies have a compelling desire to go see your ex-boyfriend, I completely understand, and we can talk about it after.
All right, then. Continue on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize a spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service and to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. While we lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores, we may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But our man is sure to be impressed with the sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries.
You know, not everyone was as happy as I was. I got sober. My significant other at the time, you know, when I went to make amends to her, later on down the road, you know, I was at a sincere level. You know, I thought I fully understood all of the things that I had done, and it had been a while since I had had talked to her, and I went. She had taken the time out to let me make those amends. And you know, I laid it out on the table, and everything that I could remember, you know, I apologized for. And I really was sincere about all the things that that I had done. And I tried to keep it at a level to where it wasn't hurtful, but it was traumatic for her as I was making these amends. And it seemed like it took forever when I was doing that. And as I talked about, you know, what I was doing in the program and why I was doing the steps and all that, and she was familiar with all of it. She frankly didn't think I was entitled to a gold star or anything. But, you know, I went through the whole process of the amends, and I thought I was thorough in remembering everything that I had done and being very honest and sincere with it. And when I was done, and as you know, she finished crying, then she let me know what I had really done. And she spent probably the next 20-30 minutes of laying it out. And you know, it was really an eye-opening experience, and it put me in my place in a lot of levels, and in a spiritual way. It brought back all the guilt and shame. It humbled me to no end. I felt that big sitting there in this place full of people. And, you know, and I was glad it was happening, you know, and it made no sense. But, it's one of the experiences, you know, we have these experiences in sobriety that seem awful, but they're absolutely the foundation of our sobriety. Coming into the rooms feeling broken down is, you know, I don't forget that experience. You know, it is part of the foundation of my recovery. And that experience in itself is part of the foundation of my recovery. That amends will always be a part of that. Just because it gave so much on so many levels. So when they mentioned the spiritual part of amends, that gave me the most spiritual, I think, experience, because it came in so many directions. I've never been so humbled in all my life. Because I didn't know exactly what I had done, but she let me know. And you know, we have this perception, you know, and we have a good idea of what we've done, but until we're on the other side, I don't think we really know. And so it was a good experience. I'm glad I got to share that with you. So thanks.
One of my resentments in sobriety was against Best Buy. And Best Buy, the store, Best Buy. I had asked for a bunch of gift cards for Christmas to Best Buy because I wanted a new TV and a new stereo and a new, you know, I wanted a new system. I used to have one in my car too, which is another story. But, so I got all these gift cards and I took all this money to Best Buy, and I did not feel that I was being treated in the manner in which I deserved to be treated while I was there, being one that had money to spend. And I let the people at Best Buy know, and then I bought a bunch of stuff that I didn't need and wasn't on my list, and I left. And I was angry. Like, how could they do that? Blah, 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 I don't like them. And, you know, that's what kind of alcoholic I am. It's not the big stuff all the time that really eats my lunch. It's the little weasley stuff I do every day that, you know, really makes me crazy. So I leave, and I'm angry, and I can't get it set up, and I don't know what to do. And, you know, I end up writing an inventory about them, and my sponsor said some magic words. She said, like, you can take it back. And And I started driving down Jefferson Avenue, and I said, oh, I'm not done. I was really mean to those poor people at the Best Buy. And so I had to turn around my car and go back. And I said, I need to speak to the manager. And I met with him, you know, and I guess I'm telling you this story because I didn't barge into the Best Buy and tell them that I had found religion. I didn't go in there and say, I've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, and this is part of what I do. I just said, I am a customer here, and I came here, and I was rude to your employees, and I did, you know, I don't know how I harmed them, but I'm that girl, you know, I'm the one that they talk about in the lunchroom. And I said, is there anything I can do to make that right? And he said, you know, I really appreciate you coming in, no one ever does that, and please just keep shopping at Best Buy. Please just keep buying things at Best Buy. And I thought, wow, okay. And I left there and I was done. And, you know, since then I have purchased several things from Best Buy. And so, you know, sometimes, this is just to tell you that sometimes I have ideas about how I deserve to be treated. And when I go in to make the amends process, I think it needs to be like this huge spiritual upheaval event where everybody's gonna like fall down and, you know, be struck by, you know, the spirit. And a lot of times it's just me cleaning off my side of the street. It's just me letting people know that I did something, that I know I was wrong, and asking how I can make it right. Now, I've had other amends experiences, which we may touch on in other paragraphs, where those kinds of deals have happened, where I have had big spiritual experiences, but a lot of them have been on, I guess, what people would consider the smaller scale or whatever. I don't get to decide that anymore, what's big and small and what's good and bad, because I don't know. It very clearly says I can't tell what's good and bad in the seventh step, so I can't tell what's big and small either. So sometimes when I think I've done something small, I make a big impact. And sometimes when I think I've done something awful, people only remember. So it's just important that I'm willing to do that and meet with them. So that's all I got.
Thank you. And we are going to continue on page 77. It says, we don't use this as an excuse from shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude towards him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret.
Really?
Really. That's what we do.
That's what I wrote. Really? That was an interesting one. What I could put to that. I didn't think I had a lot of people mad at me. You know, but I was still mad at a lot of people. And, you know, and it was more family than it was anybody else. When my sister, when she, when I was getting sober, or right before I got sober, you know, the family became very protective of each other, and you know, I was homeless at the time, and you know, I thought they should take better care of me, and instead of giving me money, they gave me a letter with directions to, I think it was the shelter, and I was highly offended. And, you know, I held on to that resentment because it was from my sister. And, you know, with that, you know, even though I had made amends, I had thought, you know, with my sister, and this is a couple of years into sobriety, and I'm with my new sponsor, because my first one got married and had moved on, and I'm with my new sponsor, and he's an older, crusty guy. And, he asked me, he said, do you have any siblings? I said, yeah, I have one. And he goes, well, what's your relationship? And I said, well, we don't talk that much. You know, we kind of have distance, and it's good that way. And he goes, no, I don't think it's good that way. And he asked me why it was good that way, and I told him why it was good that way. And he goes, no, we're going to do something different. And, you know, he was the one that pulled back the layers and, you know, and made me make things right. Because that was one of those underlining things where I really didn't make amends. And I was holding on to that. And in all actuality, you know, it was really over nothing. You know, it was just my ego still hanging on to something from the past that meant absolutely nothing. It was just an egotistical piece of me from the past. And, you know, it took 5 minutes of walking into that house and talking to my sister, and now we have a relationship. 5 minutes, and that's all it took. You know, the same thing, you know, he made me make restitution to my drug dealer because I robbed my drug dealer right before I got sober. He says, do you owe anybody money? And I said, yeah, I robbed my drug dealer. He says, you need to pay your drug dealer. So I paid my drug dealer. But these are things, you know, he made me clean my slate, you know. And I don't owe anybody. My side of the street is clean. But I'm telling you, it's those things that were still haunting me that I rationalized and justified as being okay. I was sober and I was clean, but I was still doing some of the same things that I was doing when I was drinking and using. You know, and I think that the importance lies in doing these things right, the right way. You know, and making amends is making amends. You know, and making all the amends. So that's all I've got.
This one's about going to your enemy, this paragraph. And growing up, enemy number one was my mother. You know, I grew up my whole life and I thought she just didn't have enough time for me. How dare she work and, you know, take care of the family and not, you know, I felt like we should be playing Sorry and Monopoly every night and, I don't know, like braiding each other's hair. I don't know what I thought. But I felt like she just didn't have enough time for me. And when I very first got sober, it was suggested that I begin to make living amends. And I'm not good at that, because I'm not good, you know? So the idea that I'm gonna, you know, stop drinking and somehow become nice is not gonna happen. And so, you know, I try as best I could to be nice. And what that looks like is a whole lot of phony and a whole lot of light conversation with my parents about how awesome my life is and how everything is great and aren't you guys so happy for me and everything's awesome. And, You know, I made an amends to my parents together for needing their approval. And then later, I was like, out of the middle of the blue, I was just angry at my mother. Like, this happens. It wasn't something that, like, was in my mind every single day. But when it hit me, it hit me. And I was like, damn. So I wrote it all out, and I called. I said, I'm ready. I got some inventory. I already did this about my mom and the one other thing that's kind of dumb. And she said, okay, we'll see. I love how that works, because I have this idea that my inventory is dumb or it doesn't mean anything. And it turns out to be, like, a really powerful thing, which shows that my thinking is still not always very reliable. And so I wrote this inventory about how my mom didn't have any time for me, and I was really like, blah, 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 blah. And I, you know, I went through the process, went to the seventh step, sat quietly. My mom's, like, her face came up in my mind, and I just cried and cried and cried and cried and cried. And the day that I did that, they had gotten on a plane or a boat or something and gone away for a week, and they were gone. And for that week, I just went to work and did what I needed to do. And that following Saturday, I got a phone call from my mom. And she said, hey, we're home, we're at the airport, we're back, you know, we had a good time, blah, 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 blah. And I got that horrible feeling that I get, that hypoglycemic terror, you know, feeling, like, oh. And I had to go to work. And I was like, so I went to work, and I cleaned. And I scrubbed, and I cleaned banners. I've never cleaned that much in my life. But it made the sick feeling go away. And then I left. And it came back. And I called the sponsor and I said, hey, I feel sick. And she said, well, sometimes I can't wait to make the amends. Like, I'm really good at waiting. And this time I couldn't. And so I called my mom and I said, hey, can I come, you know, I'd like to see y'all or whatever. She didn't answer. And I worked in Chesapeake at the time and lived in Newport News, and they lived in Hampton. So I got all the way home, like, I'm at my light. And my mom called and said, yeah, come on, you know, we'll meet you for dinner. We'll take you out to dinner. So they take me out to dinner to this nice restaurant, and they buy me this beautiful butterfly necklace and bring me back coffee and tell me all the nice things they did and how happy they are to see me. And I felt this big, like, you know, wow, I'm such an asshole. I need to make amends to my mom, and they're giving me presents. Like, this doesn't make any sense at all. And so I said, you know, it was a Saturday night, and I said, well, what are you going to do now? And I said, well, I'd like to come to your house. And that was weird. They were like, oh, God, what's wrong? And I said, I just want to talk to Mom. And so they said, okay. And my dad went upstairs, and my mom and I sat down at the kitchen table. And I made amends to her, and I told her how I had been, you know, I knew I was a bad daughter. We kind of went over some different things. And she proceeded to tell me about how when I had come home to get sober initially, about 2 weeks after I was home, I told them, you know, basically that I was going to do whatever I wanted to, and I was going to go back to South Carolina, because that's where I did the majority of my drinking, and they could basically, you know, kiss my ass, and I was going to do what I wanted. And that night, she told me that if I walked out that door, I couldn't come back in. And she started to cry. And she said, Nicole, that was the hardest thing I've ever had to say to you in my life. And I don't even remember that happening. So that gave me a real clear picture of just how selfish I am. Just how I don't even know how I'm affecting the people around me. You know, I am not aware of what I'm doing. I don't care what I'm doing. Sometimes, at that time, I really didn't care. I wanted what I wanted. I was newly sober, just out of detox, going to meetings, you know. I had to go back to the detox center because I told them I was going to slit my wrists. And, you know, I mean, this must have been a little traumatic for them. And here I am, like, I'm going to do what I want. You know, screw you guys. And so I asked her if there was anything I could do to make it right, and she asked me to do two things. And I said, okay. And then we began to talk. And I think I was like 28 at the time, 28 or 29. And I was obsessed with motorcycles. I wanted like a crotch rocket motorcycle real bad. And I told her. And she said, no, I don't think we need to follow that. And that was the first time I had ever had a conversation with my mother where she said, I don't think we need to tell your father that. And after that, my relationship with her began to change. And what happened was, like, 2 weeks later, I wanted grapes. And I like to eat grapes, you know, but when I eat grapes, I, like, rip them out of the bag, if that, I may or may not rinse them off, and I pull them off and I eat them, and I'm just like, grapes are grapes. And I love grapes. They're like food and drink at the same time. And so I pull them all off, and I rinse them all off, and for some reason I'm doing this, I have no idea why, but I'm like, oh, I'm going to do this. And I put them all on a paper towel, and I wrap them all up, and I dry them off, and I put them in a new paper towel. And then I realized that when I was a little kid, every single time I wanted grapes, that's what my mother did. And it took forever. And I thought, wow, here I am thinking my mother never had time for me. And she gave me so much of her time. You know, she gave me so much of her time. And I didn't even know it. And that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't made amends. You know, it wouldn't have happened. And now, since then, I've lost jobs, I've had physical problems, I've had insane boyfriends, I've had all kinds of things happen, and she gets to hear about it. And our relationship today is very different. And it's a direct result, I believe, of making that amends and being willing to listen to her and to try to make an attempt to clean up my side of the street.
Thank you.
Okay. Continuing on page 77, it says, under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply we tell them that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out our past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It is water over the dam.
I think with this one, you know, right before I first got sober, my father had called me and said he was highly disappointed in me because I couldn't handle my liquor. And I come from, you know, that old school upbringing where, you know, a man's supposed to be a man, you know. Supposed to take care of business, you're supposed to take care of your kids and what have you. And you know, that didn't bother me when he said that. I mean, I kind of got that. And I ignored that. And we talked, I guess it was years later, you know, after I got sober. And I was down at his house, and I had made amends to him with regards to that. And, you know, this is a guy that had a really tough upbringing. I mean, he was homeless as a kid, you know, and lived on his own from the age of 13, and really never had a nourishing childhood or anything like that. And, you know, and I never received that from him growing up. So, you know, to make amends to him was, you know, I kind of hated the guy almost growing up because I wanted a dad, but I didn't have this dad. But making amends to him in this light was okay. You know, AA gave me something that helped me break through that barrier. And so making amends to him, it was, that's what was important. The harm that I had done, or the hurt that I had done for him in not taking care of my children at the time, that's what pained him. Not that there was direct pain towards him, but that bothered him, you know, and that's the amends I made, you know, with him. And, you know, none of the other stuff mattered. You know, he and I have a good relationship, and the things that have happened is the acceptance, you know, that's come about from making amends with him, that's helped me. It has been phenomenal. That wouldn't have happened. You know, there would have been a deeper and deeper resentment had life gone on, you know, without AA, had I never stopped drinking or, and whatever. You know, it's, and it's a direct result of AA being in my life, having a sponsor, you know, giving me that guidance through the whole process, you know, and having a higher power in my life to where, you know, I can ask for some guidance, you know, throughout the whole thing. You know, I didn't have a bad childhood, really. I didn't have a bad childhood. I never wanted for anything. You know, but there was just something that made me stop growing. It made me change directions. I don't know what that was. And it really doesn't matter. Good thing is I'm here tonight. You know, I have a good life. I have a good relationship with my parents now. I have a good relationship with my kids. And it's that process, you know. And a big part of it comes from making amends with the people that you've hurt, and mostly it's the people that you hurt or the people that you love. You know, it's the craziest thing, you know, where you cannot care at some part of your life about how you're hurting the people you love, and then see the importance of, you know, how much they mean to you once you get past that part of making that amends, you know. And, you know, they're the people that I think about on a daily basis today. So it's incredible, you know. That's all I've got.
Thanks.
I think we're still talking about enemies. and you get thrown out of offices and that kind of thing. It shouldn't matter, blah, blah, blah. So, I know I look like a really stellar employee, but I haven't always been the best employee, and especially if I feel as though I need to be treated a certain way, that's a recurring theme, and I'm not being treated as such. And so, there was a period when I was sober, and I got transferred from a department that I liked to a department that I didn't like. Had a boss that I had absolutely no respect for, and didn't mind letting her, you know, everyone know. You know, I mean, there were words that I won't say into the microphone to describe some of these people. And I would go to work every day, and I would hate it, and I just fought and fought and fought, you know. And I didn't mean to move it, you know. I mean, I just flat out told them how I felt all the time. And then I was being micromanaged, and, you know, they'd ask me, like, about a long-distance phone call, and be like, where's this 17 cents? And I'd send them 17 pennies and be like, there it is. And and that's how I was at work, you know. Like, don't mess with me. I don't have time for this. You know, that's how I thought. I've got bigger things to do, and I don't need to be worrying about what y'all want me to do. And took me a long time to understand the work, too. So
Anyway, I reached a point where I'm willing to make amends to one of the people, one of these micromanaging people that wants to know about the money and all this stuff. And I hated everybody there, but he, you know, he stood out. Well, I'll start with him, you know. He looked kind of like the guy in Dilbert. And so I went there, and I said, you know, this is what I did, and I was wrong, and I'm sorry, I disrespected you, blah, blah, blah. You know, how can I make it right? And he said, look, I'm not that worried about what you did, but you really hurt this other guy, the department head. He was on the list too. He was in something that I referred to as the triangle of power. These people that were just jacking with me. And so I had to go. And I needed to make amends to him, you know. But he had retired. I didn't really ever want to see him again. And but I'd go to work and I'd get that icky feeling again, you know. Like, I know when I'm off the beam. You know, I know when I'm jacked up. And so I go in there and I'm like, ugh. So I asked one of the ladies if she has his phone number, and she says yes. So I called, and I left a message. And he called me back, and I said, I'd like to meet with you. And he said, what do you want to meet with me for? And I thought, oh, this is how this is going to go. And you know, this is it. And he wouldn't meet with me. He said, if you need to say something to me, you can do it on the phone. And so I made the amends on the phone. And I told him that I was wrong and that, you know, the stuff I had done. I don't think I went into, like, the pennies thing with him, but I went into some other stuff that I had done. And he said, you know, Nicole, I just wanted to help you. We were just trying to help you. I'm like, oh, didn't feel like that to me. You know, him trying to help me feels like me getting what I want. And, that's not... Me, but I said, okay, you know, I asked him if there was anything I could do to make it right, and he didn't say anything that I can remember. What I remember was him telling me that he had just been trying to help me. So there again, amends, nine times out of ten, the unexpected happens. I find out someone wants to help me, and in my mind, they're just jacking with me, you know, fancied or real resentments, you know. I'm fancy a lot. And so that was one example of that happening. And the other thing that was important about that was that I went to make amends to one person and they let me know how much I harmed someone else. And that was a different experience for me too. Because I always think, well, let's just talk about me and you. I don't care about anybody else. You know, let's just get this over with. It made it possible for me to continue making amends through that process of losing my job, of making amends to, you know, my assistant who I wasn't nice to, you know, who I was confusing, those kinds of things. And incidentally, when she found out I lost my job, she did a happy dance. So that'll give you an idea of how our relationship was. And I was able to make amends to her. You know, so I've been able to make amends to people that I don't like, and even people that don't like me. And here I am. I'm alive. I'm breathing. It's okay. I didn't get struck by lightning, and no one disappeared. So it's okay. It's okay for me to go to those people that I don't like and that I'm afraid of. So we take the bit in our teeth and move on. And that's what I did with those.
Alright. And page 78. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approaching this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them.
I know all about this one. $38,000is what I owed when I came into the program. It was cocaine or pay the bill. That's how my life was at the end. And, you know, I got sober and, you know, the first couple of months were pretty good. And then the inevitable comes about and the 1-800 numbers start calling you and they don't stop calling. And then they call all the time. And they call at night and at work, and they call your work. And I don't answer the phone. And I'm with my sponsor a lot. And he asked me, why is your phone ringing all the time? I said, man, these guys are calling me all the time. And he goes, you got to answer them. I said, no. They want money. He said, you got to pay them back. And I said, man, I can't pay those people back. And he said, you got to pay them back. And in my mind, you know, everything does is big, you know, and that's all I could see was big. It took me 5 years, and I paid every bit of it back. I answered all those phone calls, and I made deals with all of them, and negotiated with all of them, and made payment arrangements, and I paid every one of them back, and it took me 5 years. Once I got past, you know, I started with the little ones, you know, and that's what made it easy, is I took a little bill, and I got it paid off in a few months, so I said, all right, I can do this. And, you know, the phone calls stopped. That made it easier. I was poor, but, you know, I had what I needed. And my kids had what they needed. It was all in my head that, you know, I wasn't going to have what I needed. Kids weren't going to have what they needed. And, you know, I was able to make that chunk of amends, you know. And I didn't think it was important, you know. I thought I could brush that off, but that is a very important part of it, is making that financial amends. Even to the drug dealer, it was an important part to get that part of it out of the way. But, you know, all of it is. It's leaving no part of it left alone, if you will. So it can be done. And I've heard numerous stories, you know, in the rooms of people in worse shape than I was, being able to take care of business and financially clean their lives up. And they're in great shape today, so, you know. I have clothes on today, and I have a job, and I have a good job. And, you know, when I got here, I was homeless and $38,000 in the hole. But, you know, things change over time. And, you know, I got accountable, you know, and I got pushed in the right direction to do so. So it's important, you know. I'm glad I did it. That's all I've got.
Thanks.
You're next, son.
Yeah. Anyone talks about strange mental blank spots that we experience when we're drinking, just before we take the drink? I have purchased cars in that state. And laptops and other things. You know, this is a place where I have struggled throughout sobriety and have continued to struggle. I wish I could. When I very first came to AA, I had some credit card debt, and I lived with my parents, and it was really easy to pay them off. And that's it. And that's what I did. And then I got into more credit card debt, and then
of several thousand dollars and worried that I'm going to look irresponsible, I think the best thing I can do is buy a certificate of deposit with that money instead of pay off my bills so that it looks like I'm okay. And that didn't work real good either. And so I ended up using some of that money to pay off some debts. And I got, finally, when I went to go make amends to my dad, like a week or two after that, he gave me a check from a life insurance policy that he had taken out on me when I was a little kid that I guess grew over time. And he was like, I don't understand how it worked, but he was like, we can cash it in or we can keep it or you can buy it. I don't know, what do you want to do? I said, I don't take the money. And so he gave me this check and I paid off all my credit cards and all I had was a car payment. And I thought, yeah, this is good. And I felt really good about myself. I was giving money away. I was going, you know, I was doing the deal. I was doing what we talk about in here. But it didn't take long for me to want something shiny, you know? I have a tendency to like shiny things. And not jewelry, but automobiles and TVs and stereos and electronics. And I'm kind of like a guy that way. And so, you know, I got back into the mix again. And but I can tell you this, money, I understand it today is a tool for me, and it's a spiritual tool. And I very recently, had someone purchase me a gift on a payment plan, and then not fulfill their obligation to pay for the gift. And so it was now my obligation to pay for the gift. And after I threw my phone across the room and screamed at the people at Busch Gardens, and I called my sponsor and I called them back and I said, you know, I'd like to just pay it off. Just get it done. Let's just make it even Steven here so we're done. And that's what I did. It didn't feel good. But 3 days later, all the things that I was worried about that I was going to have to pay for were paid for by other people. All of a sudden I got all these weird gifts that I wasn't expecting. And so sometimes if I'm willing to do the spiritual thing that makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable, the money always shows up when I need it. And that's what I have found. So, you know, I thought, gosh, I gotta pay $80 for this thing. I don't even like it. I don't want to do it. No. And I need to buy, like, I'm getting ready to graduate from college. I need to buy a cap and gown. I need to get things. I need to do stuff. And all of that was taken care of. All of it was done. And I didn't have to do anything special or use any cards to make that happen. And so sometimes just the willingness to pay and to make the payment, other things begin to come into my life that take care of it. And it's not always money. Sometimes I just get, you know, weird things. Like things just start happening that I can't explain. So am I completely debt-free and carefree? No. But I don't want people calling me every day. I'm not hounded. And I'm not comfortable with it. But I know, you know, I continue to take the actions I need to take to work through that. So that's my experience.
All right. Thank you very much. We are going to stop there. We are dangerously close to 8 p.m. I'm now going to pass the seven tradition basket. And the seven tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their groups, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And do we have any announcements?
All right.
Simple
action.
Hey, Donna.
four speakers from Alcoholics Anonymous that have over 30 years of sobriety. So you all come, everybody's welcome. And we're going to have 1939 AA meeting, just like they did when they first read the book. And we're going to read out the first edition of the book. Share my experience from 30 years of sobriety.
Thank you.
All right. The Simple Actions Group, we're having our supper and a speaker Monday, November 3rd, potluck supper at 6 p.m. and speaker at 7. It's going to be Mike B. He's coming up from North Carolina. So that'll be a good night. Please come out. And Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. And is there anybody here in their first 30 days of sobriety that would like to introduce themselves?
Hey, Melissa.
My name's Bob. I'm Paul.
Hey, Bob. Welcome.
Thank you for coming this evening. We do have literature available. There's some brochures and books. Please see me if you'd like any of that. And sponsorship. Sponsorship is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, Debbie and Evan, or Rick, you are here. Sweet. We'll be up at the front to answer any questions that you may have. Please feel free to talk to them. And thank you guys once again for sharing. Close up, but everyone is welcome to come and join us at IHOP after the meeting to further discuss whatever we want. Can somebody please read the last two paragraphs on page 164? All right, stealing it.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage from your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. We'll close up with the Lord's Prayer.
I am so cold. I can't wait to go outside.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.